Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Nolan is standing by.
Hey, Wacky Bruce!
Coming to you from an undisclosed location, this is the Bruce Exclusive. And here's your host, Bruce Nolan.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. We're going to do things a little different today. We're going to start with emails, and we're going to get caught up, and then I'm going to take you through an exercise. And it's not an exercise where we do a mock draft together, because we're going to do plenty of those, I'm sure. I was just a guest on Pat Moran's podcast, Talking Buffalo. We did a live mock. I'm sure at some point I might do one, but that's not what this is about. We're going to look at multiple mock drafts to outline how there's multiple paths to success for the Buffalo Bills in the 2023 NFL draft. You can have multiple different mock drafts that all got a B or an A from the same person, if that person's willing to be a little bit open-minded. There are many ways to skin that cat. Let's start with emails. Evan says, here is my take, and it's based somewhat on previous results. He thinks Bean's going to get someone he absolutely shouldn't be able to get in round one who unexpectedly falls to Buffalo. Ed Oliver, Tremaine Edmonds, Dalton Kincaid as examples. Then in round two, get someone who could have gone round one. Osiris Torrance, A.J. Epinesa, James Cook. Yes, I know, no running backs round one, he says. I'm thinking for some reason that the rest of the NFL is dumb and lets Neighbors or Ardunze fall to the 20s, and then there's a big old defensive lineman available at 60. Anyway, the window isn't closed. Josh doesn't want out. Clear your schedule for the parade in February. The second window of Josh Allen's career just opened up. One of the things I think is interesting about this, and the reason why I wanted to make sure that I read this email, was because we really feel like he should have gone higher is primarily based on where we saw that guy in mock drafts. That's primarily what we think, because overwhelmingly, the people who are making that statement don't actually have grades on these players. They're just taking the narrative of, hey, they could have gone higher because I saw them higher in many mock drafts. So it's a relative to expectation judgment. It's not a relative to opinion judgment. And I think it's important to make the distinction between those two things when we talk about value. Well, value on a player is obviously subjective, but is it subjective based on your own evaluation, or is it subjective based on narrative that you got from consuming lots of mock drafts? I think it's important to draw that distinction because those two things are not the same at all. Great example. Boogie Basham was a player that Brandon Bean said, hey, I didn't think he was going to be there, but let's stop right there for a second. Every GM says that all the time and they lie. Like all the time they lie. If they actually drafted for need and reached above a player that was higher on their board, to get a player that was a need, they would never admit it, ever. Every single GM always seems to be able to get their guy. It's amazing. And the answer is because they all lie. Yes, even Brandon Bean, they all lie all the time. It's just part of the dance. But a lot of mock drafts the year that Boogie Basham was drafted had Boogie Basham going as a late first rounder. So when you get them at 60, you go, wow. I mean, I saw this guy at 31 in a lot of mock drafts, and now I get him in the second round. I know it wasn't 60, but it was later in the second round. It'd be 60 this year. And that's where our judgment comes from. So I think it's important to draw the distinction between this guy could have gone higher because I saw them higher in a mock draft, or this guy should have gone higher, I think, because I had a first round grade on them. I think that's a different conversation when you're talking about value, and I think that distinction is important. I will say, I find it very difficult to believe at this point that Odunze, Neighbors, and Marvin Harrison Jr. are not all gone in the top seven. I'd be shocked if any of them made it to the teens, much less the 20s. But teams do weird stuff. And it's a really strange thing. If you think that if you're in a dynasty draft and you think that there are seven elite players and you're sitting at eight, all you need is one person to do something weird. And all of a sudden, you have an elite player fall to you. And when you're 28, you need more of those things to happen. But teams do that. Teams do weird things in the first round. It's just the way it is. So yeah, you can get a player like Dalton Kincaid, who I did not think was going to be there, close to where the Buffalo Bills picked. But you had a run on receivers. Bam, 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 bam. Quentin Johnston went higher than I thought he reasonably should have gone. And that pushed Dalton Kincaid down. James says, hey, Bruce, I was wondering what the wide receiver versus prospect who plays another position polls you did were about. Now you know, because I did a pod last week on it. The PFF mock draft machine allows you to filter the players available by multiple positions as opposed to just one, like many mock draft sites do. Most times, I find myself filtering on wide receiver, defensive interior, and edge when the Bills pick at 28 comes up. Given your recent appearance on Cover One's Disguised Coverage, talking about the Bills' remaining needs and how to address them, free agency versus the draft, what position groups would you filter on for the Bills at 28? I would take out quarterback, kicker, punter, tight end, linebacker. I would filter out those positions. I look at everybody else. Is there a circumstance where I could see the best player on the board by a metric mile being a defensive tackle? Yep. How about an edge rusher? Yep. How about even a corner? Yeah, I don't think corner is nearly as significant of a need as some do. We had a couple national pundits mock corners to the Buffalo Bills in the first round. I don't think it's a tremendous need for the Bills right now, but is there a possibility that someone ridiculous could fall? Yeah, of course. If Terrion Arnold ends up showing up at 28, I mean, I wasn't planning on a corner, but yeah, sure. Thank you for this free money that you just gave me, universe. With safety, I think there's a reasonable chance no safeties go in the first round. But you're at the end of the first round in a nightmare scenario. Is Tyler Newbin the best player on the board? Maybe. So I'm not going to filter out those players because there is a possibility. I can see a universe where that ends up being the best player and you just can't trade out the way you want to. So I see a lot of possibilities. And I think the broader your scope is going in, the more reasonably you're going to handle whatever happens to you. There are numerous pathways to success. That's the reason why we're talking about this the way we're talking about this today. And so those are the positions I would filter out. Everything else, I'd be in on. Now, obviously, running back, you know Mile by now. I'm not going to take a running back in the first round. So you can go ahead and filter that out too. But as far as positions I have not previously said, no, I will never take them in the first round. That's what I would do. Joseph says, we live in a great era of quarterbacks and free agency. And this free agency had me thinking about the allocation of resources. We're in a quarterback-driven league. It obviously makes more sense to just pay a guy
I would rather have Josh Allen and his $60 million salary than others. In baseball, there's a stat war that gives a numerical grade to players. Then people go further and say how much a single win is worth. In 2023, one war win above replacement was worth $8 million. So from there, if you pay your top player $40 million, but they give you six wins, they're worth it. Now for my question, how can that principle be applied to the greater NFL? My initial thought would be for you to take a QB stew and divide the total salary of all of them per ranking point or something like that. So we know how bad Daniel Jones is to Brock Purdy and how much more or less value they are to Josh Allen. But then apply that system to literally every single position. My point in saying this is, at what point is it not worth it anymore to have a superstar quarterback or wide receiver or defensive end? We will ignore the obvious caveat that it's worse when you're paying all that money for nothing like Jones or Kyler Murray. But there is a point where, based on production, it would make more sense to have Baker Mayfield for $35 million plus Jalen Waddle at $15 million and Alan Lazard at $13 million instead of just Josh Allen at $61 million. Is there a way to give literal value to those and pull a money ball situation to see how many more wins we would get? That's all for that. I get tired of all the bloated contracts. The answer is it gets really, really messy with this. Pro Football Focus attempts to do war, and the reason it hasn't caught on significantly is because it's just too difficult to do in a complicated team sport. It's a lot easier to do in a game that is very, very much a one-on-one game, which is what baseball is, right? It's pitcher versus batter in a meaningful way. Obviously, the defense that you have going on matters, but it's much, much more of a one-on-one game than football is. Football is an extremely complicated, interwoven team sport. That's not me knocking baseball. It's not my cup of tea, but I'm knocking baseball. But a lot of people love baseball, but it's just a matter of simplifying data. It's far more difficult. Think about a quarterback's relative to your system. If you have a quarterback who is maybe not as gifted, but he runs your system extremely well, how much more is that worth than a quarterback who's really gifted, but wouldn't necessarily run your system well? How about quarterbacks who throw the ball 40 times a game versus quarterbacks who throw the ball 20 times a game and then run 8 times a game? I mean, it's really difficult. How much is a good quarterback worth? And then how do you define good quarterback, and where is that threshold? The answer is, for me personally, that the market's going to take care of this. As long as the cap keeps going up, we really don't have to worry about the quarterback salary as a raw number. You have to worry about quarterback salary as a percentage of the cap. And if that number creeps up and creeps up, then eventually the market's going to correct itself. And you will see that problem get taken care of. But as long as it's a passing primarily based league, and as long as teams with elite quarterbacks are winning way more often than teams without elite quarterbacks, I think you will continue to see quarterback contract, quarterback contract, quarterback contract, push and push and push and push and push the envelope. And it's just part of the deal. That's just the way it works. The fact that we can only name a very small handful of times when the Super Bowl winning team did not have a very high level quarterback, that should probably tell you something. And the teams know that too. In addition, I don't think it's just about wins. I think it's also about marketing. And when you have a really, really good quarterback, you sell a lot of jerseys, people come to see the really good quarterback. Even if your team is good, if your quarterback isn't, you probably that's something that they care about from an ownership standpoint. So it's really hard to parse the data. And I'll be honest with you, I think we should keep trying to get better and better and better, but I don't think you ever get there. I don't think you ever get to the spot where you're like, yes, we have this nailed down. We can quantify the value of this player in football. You just can't do it. So that doesn't mean you don't keep trying to get better and better and better at quantifying value. But as far as being able to wrap your head around it in such a way that basketball has done and baseball has done, I don't think it's ever going to happen, because it's 22 people on the field at a single time. It's too hard to do it. So we got through emails. We are going to take a quick break. Stick with me. We'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative, along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for joining me for this edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. It's Mockin' time. You know, it's Morphin' time. It's Power Rangers. Anyway, moving on. I want to take you through different individual mock drafts. Each one has an entirely different strategy when it comes to drafting. And I want to talk you through how each one of these things can potentially be valuable in its own way. Pluses, minuses, things you'd like to see different, great value, missed opportunity. And really, that's what it boils down to. It boils down to what are the things you prioritize? Because we live in a limited resource environment. The draft is a limited resource environment, even if you have 11 picks. But because you have 11 picks, there's lots of ways to skin that cat. First mock draft. Jackson Powers Johnson at 28 overall, the center from Oregon. Javon Baker, the wide receiver from UCF, at 60. Christian Boyd, defensive tackle, Northern Iowa at 128. Bo Braid, 133 in round four, safety from Maryland. Mason Smith, defensive interior lineman, round five, 144. Dylan Laub, running back, New Hampshire, round five, 160. Luke McCaffrey from Rice, wide receiver, round five, 163. Steel Chambers, linebacker, Ohio State, 189 in round six. Round six, 200, Caden Wallace, tackle, Penn State. Tanner Bertinoli, center, Wisconsin, at 204. And at 248, DeAndre Prince, cornerback, Mississippi. This mock draft had you take the best player on the board at 28 at a position that was recently weakened. You got cheaper, you got younger, and you potentially got better on your offensive line by doing this. However, if you are someone who believes there is a massive drop-off between the second tier of receivers and the third tier of receivers, you're not going to like this. Unless you think Javon Baker is part of the second tier of receivers. I like Javon Baker. I'm very pleased taking him at 60. I think he's a true X receiver. Christian Boyd, defensive lineman, you're like, okay, I want to make sure we are stacked and ready to go on the defensive line. I think if you think Christian Boyd can be a long-term one tech, then you're probably thinking, okay, we backfilled that. Daquan Jones is a little bit older. That's of value to me. Bo Braid, you got someone who can come in and compete and be versatile at safety, but probably doesn't have the same athleticism that you want. Are you trying to just play it back with Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, get somebody versatile, maybe not someone who's an elite athlete, you're going to continue to play a lot of split field to protect him, then maybe you like this a little bit. Mason Smith, I doubled down. You think to yourself, well, Austin Johnson's on a one-year contract. You want to make sure you backfill. The Buffalo Bills did carry five at the beginning of the year last year, so now we got our fourth and fifth. Dylan Laub, you want someone who can make sure he's playing in the passing game. You want an interchangeable piece where you can ask him to catch passes. You think to yourself, I don't want someone to complement James Cook in the sense that I want someone with a very different skill set. I want someone with a pass-catching skill set so I don't have to worry about the defense getting keys based on who I have on the field. Luke McCaffrey, hey, we want to double down on receiver. Javon Baker is a pure X receiver, but Luke McCaffrey is much more of a Isaiah Hodgins sort of player, more of a big slot guy. And so I want to make sure I cover my bases. I want to get bigger, but I also want to have the ability to get some of that size to translate to the slot. So both of my receivers are 6'2 that I picked, but one of them's a pure X guy, one of them's a slot guy. I've added size without becoming redundant in skill set at that point. Steel Chambers, you need someone to replace Tyler Matakevich, right? Former running back, will run, tackle, play special teams, still developing. Caden Wallace, we got to make sure that we backfill in the event that, what if Spencer Brown, you know, he's coming to the last year of his contract. What if he doesn't resign? You want to have somebody on the bench who you developed, who has that size, someone you can get in your building for a year and really help him. Bertanulli, you thought, well, we were down two interior offensive linemen when you cut Mitch Morse and you traded away Ryan Bates. Now you're back to zero again. You were negative two. Now you're plus two with Jackson Powers Johnson in the first round and Bertanulli here late. DeAndre Prince, you need a Dane Jackson replacement. He walked and you really didn't replace him. Spend the last pick of the draft on someone who's, yeah, I mean, a little stiff, but he's much more of an athlete and the stiffness can kind of be worked through if you have a zone heavy system. And it's the seventh round. Like, this is a reasonable mock draft. I just made an argument that I thought was pretty fair for all of these players. Compare that to this mock draft. 28 overall, A.D. Mitchell. 60 overall, Roman Wilson. 128 overall, Braylon Allen, round four. Round four, 133, Cedric Gray, linebacker, North Carolina. Round five, 144, Christian Boyd. Round five, 160, Jalen Harrell, defensive end, Michigan. Round five, 163, Drake Nugent, center, Michigan. Round six, 189, Solomon Bird, edge, USC. Round six, 200, Steel Chambers again, linebacker, Ohio State. Round six, 204, Dominique Hampton, safety, Washington. And round seven, 248, Laden Robinson, guard, Texas A&M. You want receivers. You got them. You got a player who, again, a pure X in A.D. Mitchell. Yes, there are concerns about effort stuff, for sure. I mean, it almost feels like a Steeler, kind of built in, based on the way that Mike Tomlin has dealt with George Pickens and Antonio Brown and, to a lesser extent, Deontay Johnson, players like that. Do you think he fits the culture? Are you okay with it? He's a freak athlete, but he doesn't move like that in real game. But he's got tons of potential. I saw somebody say, interestingly enough, they're like, well, A.D. Mitchell will either be a fringe top 10 receiver or he'll be washed out by the end of his rookie contract. There is no in between. You want boom or bust? You want to swing for the fences? Okay. Roman Wilson, one of my favorite players in the draft. I have the Triforce. Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall, Javon Baker. We got Wilson at 60. I think he can come in and play the slot for you right away. But you might be like, oh, well, you know, I really like Khalil Shakir. And I don't really want him to get snaps taken away from him. So maybe you don't like that. Or maybe just go, you know what? We're going nuclear. We're taking A.D. Mitchell and Roman Wilson. One of them has to hit big, right? Give Josh Allen what he wants. Braylon Allen, you want size. You want more offensive weapon. Offense, 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 offense. I don't care about anything else. I'm taking a running back. Cedric Gray, you want to play more 4-3, and you really don't love your current options. So you double down. Just like you did with Dorian Williams last year. You come back again, Cedric Gray. Christian Boyd, I already been through. Jalen Harrell, edge, Michigan, gives you some of that speed rush that you didn't really have. If you wanted someone who's a little different than the types of players that the Buffalo Bills historically draft, because you think, wow, man, they've really took a swing on a lot of edge players and they really didn't pan out. Let's try something different. You'd go with Jalen Harrell. Drake Nugent. You got a center from a really, really good program. Well, you know, you need to hedge against the idea that maybe David Edwards doesn't play really well at left guard, although Nugent, it's a pure center, and you need to move Connor McGovern back and put Drake Nugent there. You want to make sure you're plus one in the interior lineman bucket. Solomon Bird, another edge. We have two edge rushers in this draft, and you had none in the last draft that I did. The last draft's biggest weakness was there was no edge rushers. They just didn't fit. You got a bunch of good players, but you weren't able to address edge. This time you doubled down on edge. This is about pass and stop the pass. You had two wide receivers and two edge rushers in this class. Steel Chambers already went through. Dominique Campton, safety. You got some depth there. Don't think he's a starter, but you need someone to come in and compete and try to be that fourth safety. And Laden Robinson, you went two interior offensive linemen this class. I can be talked into this one. I am worried about Adonai Mitchell. I mean, I'm just not a huge boomer bust guy. You know me by now. I spend a lot of time thinking about a prospect's floor because the way that your team all of a sudden becomes not talented overnight is not when you hit doubles or singles. It's when you swing for the fences and miss. So I understand that because I think there are prospects who have just as high of a ceiling, but also a higher floor. And so that kind of thing worries me. I think he does have a spectacular ceiling. I have him rated as a first round prospect, but I said for Buffalo Rumblings not too long ago that if he got drafted, I would be excited about the potential, but I would be more nervous. But you swung for the fences. You took three offensive weapons with your first three picks. You have two pass rushers. You didn't trade at all. You passed and stopped the pass. A very, very different draft that I could be reasonably talked into. The best advice I can give you after going through these exercises is there's more than one way to skin a cat. What we do is we focus on one positive or one negative, and we make our entire argument and probably our entire character, like our entire personality, around that one thing. We are way too sure about these prospects and about specific draft strategies. We are just way too sure. And we just leave ourselves no room for being flexible at all. The first one had no pass rushers in it. The second draft had double receivers and double pass rushers. Both of them have double interior linemen, but one of them has a first round interior lineman. What do you value? What are the positives and what are the negatives of the draft? My encouragement would be that the more of those you can name for every mock draft you see, the better off you're going to be. But here's the dirty little secret. We only care about the first round pick. Despite all evidence that hits and misses and things that can alter the course of your franchise can happen all over the draft, our entire identity is wrapped up in whatever our team did in the first round, which is insanity. Team building is about so much more than the first 2 days of free agency. Team building is about so much more than the first night of the draft. I'm not sure how else we could possibly see this aside from just open your daggone eyes. Look around the league. Take your head up from the highlights of that one player that you absolutely cannot function without and look around the league. The evidence is everywhere. Every corner of every day of the entire personnel acquisition season can be utilized to better your team. That's the biggest piece of advice I can give you after this exercise, is if you can only say one negative or one positive of a mock draft, you're looking too closely. Think broader. Think about the strategy. Think about what the draft achieved. Think about what it didn't achieve. If you like it, think about what it didn't do well. If you don't like it, think about what it did do well. There's no possible way you could actually hate all 11 players. What would be the odds of that? Think about it more broadly, because there's more than one way to skin a cat. And if you try and skin it a little differently and it doesn't quite work the way you want it to, well, That's the way the cookie crumbles. I'm Bruce Nolan, Buffalo Rumblings.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cope Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.